Hello, here is your KVNF regional newscast for Friday, September 14th. The lasting effects of the 416 fire, the sixth largest wildfire in state history, are just beginning to be known. According to the Durango Herald, two of the largest trees in the state of Colorado were consumed by the blaze, which grew to be over 54,000 acres in size since it started on June 1st. The record trees were in the Hermosa Creek drainage, about 20 miles north of Durango. The area is a prime spot for big trees to grow because of a combination of fertile soil, moist air, and protection from severe weather patterns. In recent years, the state of Colorado has identified five champion trees in the Hermosa Creek Valley. Champion trees are ranked on a point system, taking into account the tree's height and circumference, among other factors. One Douglas fir and two blue spruce trees were ranked number one on the list in their respective categories. A ponderosa pine and a southwestern white pine held the number two rankings for their species, according to state records. A flyover of the burn scar confirmed the Douglas fir and one of the blue spruce trees, located in the Dutch Creek Flats, burned in the 416 fire. The two trees, located in an open meadow near the confluence of Hermosa and Dutch Creeks, burned during the height of the fire. The Douglas fir stood 163 feet tall and 17 feet in circumference, making it one of the largest trees in the state. The blue spruce was listed at 166 feet tall, with a circumference of about 12 feet. The other three champion trees in the Hermosa Creek drainage did survive. Those three are a 181-foot-tall blue spruce, a 148-foot-tall ponderosa pine, and a unique southwestern white pine, which stands at 109 feet tall with a circumference of about 9 feet. In areas where the 416 fire didn't burn at high intensity, there are already signs of vegetation coming back. Now it's time for the Purple State Update with the Colorado Sun. Our weekly collaboration began last week and will continue on Fridays throughout the election season. Today, KVNF News spoke with Colorado Sun reporter John Frank about the governor's race, which is the most expensive in state history, and about a growing problem with homelessness in tourist towns on the Western Slope. First, we asked about the outside sources of money that are spending in the governor's race. At this point, 14 different organizations are spending money on ads for the race. Nine of them support Republican candidate Walker Stapleton.
There's actually even more groups that we'll add when we update this resource next week. But yes, at least nine are supporting Stapleton, and a handful are supporting Democrat Jared Polis. What this speaks to is twofold. So one, the stakes in the race. Yeah, there's national interest, but a lot of this money is coming from big donors in Colorado or corporations with big footprints in Colorado. And the business community has some concerns with Polis as governor. In addition to the stakes, second, it's a sign of how expensive this race is going to get. This outside money is typically used for negative ads and door-to-door canvassing. So voters across the state, including the Western Slope, are going to see this group's words in action, whether it's on their TV or even at their doorstep.
And let's stay with the governor's race. Much like President Trump, neither candidate for governor, Jared Polis or Walker Stapleton, will release their personal tax returns. Basically, everyone knows that they're rich. Why are they afraid to show how rich they actually are?
That's a good question. For Polis, we roughly know how rich he is. The Center for Responsive Politics estimated his net worth in 2015 at $314 million. For Stapleton, we don't have a good figure. But the importance of seeing the candidate's tax returns is far more than just the candidate's wealth. It's how they got that wealthy, what conflicts of interest with investments that may exist, and whether they pay the same tax rate that the rest of us pay, or whether, like Trump, as we saw in the 2016 campaign, they use other methods to avoid paying taxes. As we've seen in prior elections, these are questions voters wanted answered, so we're going to keep pushing to get those this election as well.
And we'll step back and take a larger look at the Western Slope in a story that you had on the website recently, Nancy Lofholm wrote a story about the homeless population in Durango. It is representative of a larger problem on the Western Slope, where homeless populations are going up in tourist towns. Paonia and Durango both recently were requested by the ACLU to remove panhandling ordinances from their city codes. I just wondered if you could talk about this problem and why it's getting worse.
The story Nancy wrote really showcases a problem that's statewide. And too often you just hear about homelessness in Denver or Colorado Springs. But what she did so beautifully was bring the story home on the Western Slope. And it was based in Durango, in fact. What she found is rising cost of living, particularly home prices in mountain towns, is really contributing to this problem of people not being able to afford a place to live. It affects, as she pointed out, an entire town's image, particularly those that rely on tourists, and negatively, in fact. And what Nancy's reporting showed is that there are no real good answers to addressing this. There are some answers, and she cites some of the programs that other big cities use, but the problem is that some of these mountain towns just can't afford those kind of interventions. And so what she found in Durango is that the homeless population just kept being moved from place to place. And this is something that's also been seen in Telluride and many other places across the Western Slope. It's an issue that deserves a lot more attention. So I'm glad Nancy was able to shine a big light on it. We launched that story on ColoradoSun.com on our opening day because we thought it was a really important one.
John Frank from the Colorado Sun. Hey, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
And in a follow-up to another fire story, Colorado Parks and Wildlife announced in a press release that it will reopen the Basalt State Wildlife Area shooting range to the public tomorrow, Saturday, September 15th. The range was closed after two individuals using prohibited incendiary tracer ammunition allegedly started the nearly 13,000-acre Lake Christine fire the evening of July 2nd. Both suspects are facing felony arson charges. After extensive internal staff discussions and weeks of listening to public comments, including comments expressed during two meetings in Basalt with more than 400 people in attendance, Parks and Wildlife will reopen the shooting range beginning tomorrow. The shooting range hours will be 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday, until further notice. In preparation for the reopening, technicians are in the process of implementing several upgrades at the range, including the installation of fire extinguishers, improvements to the backstop, and the permanent removal of vegetation and brush. And that was your KVNF regional newscast for Friday, September 14th. For KVNF News, I'm Eric Gould. Thanks so much for listening.